What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
8 o'clock hour on your home of the Cowboys and Rangers. Thanks for being the total that stands for Turn It On, Leave It On. Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy with you. Bobby Belt is out sick, and tonight, Fan Phenom is taking place again at Jake's in Grand Prairie. The G-Bag Nation will be doing their show from Jake's, and then Fan Phenom taking place for the next individual to join our 105.3 The Fan team. Cowboys.
And ruin Jake Rietma's life.
How so?
He
said,
he might show up.
Somebody Jake else to fight airtime for. Rietma's gonna be so upset.
Yeah. He's down to do every shift.
Yeah, he is.
Every shift. Kid Muse is saying you should have put in Rietma in place of Bobby. He's getting his eye black out. And he's like, call me. I don't care.
I'm ready.
All a G-Bag has to take off for soccer practice. Just call
Let's
me.
Let's talk hockey.
Let's go ahead. So there's the Jake Rietma fan club. Fan Phenom taking place tonight. The ceiling and the floor for this year's Cowboys.
I had a problem with some of this. So ESPN did ceilings and floors for all 32 NFL teams. And it says 11-6 is the ceiling and 5-12 is the floor.
11-6 is the ceiling, 5-12 for the Cowboys.
Yeah, and I don't agree with either one.
Neither do I.
I think the floor is higher than that. Now, again, injuries aside, it's like I assume when they're doing the ceiling and floor thing,
yeah,
we're just everybody's healthy.
Yep.
To me, when everybody in the whole league, there's not a single injury. There's not a single game missed in the entire NFL when you're doing these ceilings and floors.
Yep.
If Dak is healthy, they're winning way more than five games. They're probably winning double that. That's just the reality of it. Dak's floor himself was like 8. Worst case scenario, every fumble goes the other way. Every tip ball goes the other way.
Do you think if he goes to any team, he's good enough to have their floor be at 8?
Not any team. Okay. This is still a good team. You know, if he goes to, who's the worst roster in the league? If he goes to New Orleans,
yeah.
I don't think they're a 10-win team.
Kellen. Bobby would have Kellen.
Kellen.
It's an automatic 8 wins with Kellen Moore.
But, like, you know, their floor when they're healthy, I think it's just 8 wins. And that's their floor. And we've seen their ceiling. Their ceiling's probably 12. We've seen it.
I had ceiling 13-4 or 12-5. And the way I'm coming to that, I'm splitting against Philadelphia. I'm sweeping the Giants. I'm sweeping Washington. I'm beating Green Bay at home, which in a realistic world, again, this best case, but in a realistic world, probably is not happening. I win at Denver. I beat Arizona, who has been a house of horrors for you in your own building. I'm beating Minnesota, since I don't believe in J.J. McCarthy. I'm beating the Chargers, who signed Keenan Allen, but lost their left tackle for the entire year. But I'm winning both games against Washington, splitting against Philly, and beating teams like Green Bay and Denver in my best-case scenario. I think that's me to 13-4 or 12-5. And then I'm kind of just working opposite of that to get to 6-11 as my worst case.
Okay.
6-11, worst case. I lose to Green Bay. I lose to Denver. I lose to Kyler again. I lose to the Vikings. I lose to the Chargers. And I get swept by Philadelphia.
Tough schedule.
And I kind of split with Washington.
Yeah, tough schedule. I could see 6-11. I don't think so.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, I can't really see it.
Yeah, it would take
again,
a lot.
Again, with all health.
It would take a lot. With all health.
And Micah.
With all health, I mean, it would take, like, the ultimate amount of bad breaks. Like, holy cow. Like, an inordinate amount of bad breaks. But this list was just way off the mark to me anyway. I think they're way too high on Washington. They had Washington's floor at 7-10. They had 5 wins last year that were coin flips. coin flips. And we all know those generally go the other way.
Let me finish with the Cowboy write-up from Archer. X Factor Brian Schottenheimer. How ready is Schottenheimer for his first head coaching job? He saw his father, Marty, coach four teams, has been an assistant for more than 20 years. Players like the culture he has built so far in the spring and summer, but he'll be counted on to make split-second decisions that will impact winning and losing, which ultimately will be how he is judged. The Cowboys are not a typical team, given the attention they receive on an hourly basis. So that's their write-up. What was the Washington ceiling?
The Washington ceiling was 12-5, which is what they were last year. Listen, I don't think ESPN knows what a ceiling is.
Like Michael Jordan?
They had the ceiling for the NFC was Philadelphia at 13-4. That's the ceiling. No. Detroit just won 15 games last year.
Everyone's terrified to say someone can have 15 wins.
They are.
It's so scary.
They're so scared about it. They're so scared about it. You know, if you go around the rest of the NFC, so it was obviously Cowboys' ceiling is 11-6. The Giants' ceiling was 9-8. Their floor is 4-13. Philadelphia, ceiling 13 and floor is 8 wins. Washington is 12 wins, ceiling 7 win floor. Bears 11, floor is 6. Detroit, their ceiling is 12-5. No, it's not. They just won 15 games. They return everybody. That's their ceiling. The floor is 7.
Oh, they don't have the coaches.
Yeah. Their floor is 7-10. I think that's too low. They won 15 games last year. They're going to win less than half their games this year. Less than half the amount of games they won. I think it's entirely too low. Green Bay, their floor is at 6. I think that's way too low. I don't see how Green Bay's floor is 6. The same with Minnesota.
I've been reading and hearing like some anti-Green Bay stuff in this offseason. Whether it's Love turning it over, Love with the little surgery. I don't know. I feel like that hype factor for Green Bay is not there like I was expecting at the end of last season. Just something to keep in mind.
Something to keep in mind. Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. Like the ceilings were just too low on some of these teams. And I think the floor on some of these, they were way, way off the mark on some.
What are the totals saying about Cowboys ceiling and floor based on the schedule, Peyton?
So from the 3-2-5, ceiling is 10-7. Floor is 5-12.
Dang.
And you have a couple in here that are the ceiling is 9-8, floor is 8-9. How so is right
the,
around 500.
But how is the ceiling 9 or 10 wins when you've been a 12-win team?
Right.
You've been 12-5.
Different head coach, maybe, if that
okay.
makes that big of a difference.
Well, yeah, but I don't think anyone would think it's no one would say it's a tremendous drop. You can argue easily it's not an upgrade. On paper, it's not an upgrade. But I don't think you can say, oh, this is a tremendous drop-off to have you lose three games from McCarthy to Schottenheimer. Okay, I'm not here to pump up Brian Schottenheimer when he's done nothing as a head coach, but to me, the difference between the two doesn't make up for three wins. They've been a 12-5 team, so how is the ceiling 9 wins? What's the difference?
Yeah,
it's not coaching. I guarantee the totals aren't saying it's because of coaching.
Yeah, I don't see them winning only 9. Like, I don't know how you go from 12-9.
Now look, there's
with everybody healthy.
There's offensive line questions, there's cornerback questions, there's stop and the run questions, and there's running back questions. There are questions.
2-4 brings up Dak's health was a major issue for
well,
them,
sure.
You know,
we're not okay. That's fine, but we're doing this with Dak playing all the games. That's the exercise. Unless you're telling me this article says different.
Look, it doesn't. Rams and Niners both have a ceiling of 12 and a floor of 7.
Shaquille O'Neal says,
Shaquille O'Neal.
Screw 9 wins, screw 10 wins. They're winning the Super Bowl or this on the Overtime Pod.
You recently said in a podcast that
if the Cowboys don't win this year, I'll wear that Charles Barkley dress on the strip of Las Vegas.
Why did you say that?
Did you hear me say that?
Yeah.
You sure it was me?
Pretty sure you said it.
I think it was AI.
You think the Cowboys have a real good shot this year?
We have a shot every year. We're going to win the Super Bowl this year. And if not, I'll walk a New York City block butt-ass naked. Booty buck naked.
Now, I'm starting to put Shaq in the Chris Russo category of not living up to his word.
I'm not going to do bikini.
I think Shaq
that's garbage.
He didn't follow through with another Cowboys promise that he lost. So, you know, I'm not putting a lot of stock in that. But I wasn't aware Shaq was this big Dallas Cowboy fan. I did not know that. 877-881-1053 in order to hit us up on DFW Sports Station 105.3 The Fan. Some other NFL notes. Landon Dickerson, the Eagles Pro Bowl guard who suffered the injury, he is going to be in question for the opener. So this is an automatic Pro Bowler, so the Cowboys may be facing a compromised Eagles O-line. Brandon Ayuk scheduled to return week 6 for San Francisco. They're having some injuries mount. In case you missed it, Jordan Addison for your fantasy draft, he's suspended for the first 3 games for the dynamic duo there in Minnesota. That could be more targets for Justin Jefferson or double teams with Jordan Addison gone for the first 3 games for violating their substance abuse policy.
I gotta say, this is like, I am not interested in fantasy football yet. Are you?
Well, you better be. You better be soon.
Are we doing one this year?
Did Carter send out the email?
No, he renewed the league or whatever, but I haven't got an email yet. I'll talk to him today or something about it, but it should be soon, unless you don't want to join.
Are you thinking about not participating?
I don't know. I'm not doing any other leagues. I haven't decided yet.
We got to replace Will as well. I told Jake Rietma maybe he can be, you know.
Well, Rietma's definitely in. Reitman's got to be in.
He's got to be in.
Well, I think it's one of those where you got to lose one to then gain one, or else you just keep adding people, and then you got a 20-team league. I think we're at 14 right now.
Oh,
so.
That's too many.
Ooh. Who played? I'll cancel the people right now. I'm the defending champion, in case you didn't hear.
So Sean will be back. I'll be back. Sandler, Josh Clark.
See, Sandler, we could get
Jared could be on the he's really good, too, so we might need to kick him out. Josh Clark, web guy. Who else?
Medford.
Okay.
You have Walchuk and Eric, Corey.
Corey, he checks out every other year.
Yeah.
If you ask them, hey, do you want to play? It's not a big deal if you don't. Like, you throw in there, you know, hey.
Corey's one of those you have to make him play.
Yeah.
So Corey could be out. Who else?
That's what I want you guys to make me want to play. Make me feel wanted. Make me feel wanted.
No, you're an easy mark.
Yeah.
You're an automatic win.
Larry,
I want you in. Oh, Larry can go.
Yeah, Larry. Is Larry even work here anymore?
I love Flores. He works one day a week.
I love. Doesn't Flores still work here?
He does.
I love Larry.
Every 3 weeks he's up there.
I love Larry. He's number one on the chopping block. Who else?
You had Will Chambers. He's gone, though. So
I kind of want Will still in.
I like
it.
Will.
I love Will.
And Will always comes to the parties and brings
We owe Will, too, because we screwed him on that trade. We screwed him on the Laporta trade that one year. And I'm sorry, Peyton, who else?
Carter, I believe, is the last one.
Yeah, we get rid of him.
Well, Carter's the commissioner, so he ain't going nowhere. All right, so that's where things
stand. All right, fine, I'll play. I like the draft.
I'm
a good drafter, and I don't pay attention to the team.
Yeah, the draft is fun.
The amount of times that I start a team with 4 buys that week.
How fun would it be if I just had the draft at my house? In the upstairs room after the pool party, a live draft right there. That'd be a freaking chaotic mess.
It would be nuts.
And I'm not going to even have the kids in the house. I don't have to worry about waking them up. A live draft is so fun. Have everyone on the couch with the TV and the wall.
Or your kid's not going to be there at all.
Nope. Out of the zip code, baby.
All right.
Even Chiafalo. That's why I told Chiafalo 3 weeks early to find someone to... babysit his 14 kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I may bring my kids. They can draft for me.
Or what if we had the wives draft for you? Like, for us.
Your kid doesn't even, like, your kid's so unaware, I wouldn't trust him. He called you again during the show this morning.
Yeah, that was the older one. Yeah.
What?
He needed an address. A text would have worked.
To his grandmother.
To his grandmother.
He doesn't know his grandma's address.
Doesn't know the address.
Doesn't
know my address.
877-881-1053 to hit us up on the Frankel & Frankel Injury Attorney text line. They have already screwed up my all-time favorite sports show, and this is not good news. We'll bring it to you after this.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
And we do it on your official home of the Dallas Cowboys. In case you are just waking up, you're not familiar with the show and the station, what do we get as official home of the Cowboys? Jerry Jones every Tuesday morning on our show, every Friday with KNC. We'll get Brian Schottenheimer, I believe, every single Friday. It will definitely be Schottenheimer, although I guess KNC could steal him like they did in Oxnard. We'll get Schottenheimer. The other shows, we'll get Stephen Jones weekly and a player show on the G-Bag Nation. So all that coming with Brad Sham hosting player shows on Monday night. Babe Laufenberg, all the insiders from DallasCowboys.com, just to prep you for football season. Yesterday in Crosstalk, Bobby Belt, our Cowboys insider, is out sick today. Yesterday in Crosstalk, this news started coming out. Jerry Jones telling the Dallas Morning News that he beat stage 4 melanoma, that his cancer battle lasted more than a decade, including 4 surgeries. Jerry, who is 82, told the Morning News, quote, "I have no more tumors now." So that is fantastic. The initial diagnosis, RJ, came 1 year, or maybe the year we started this show, in 2010. Yeah. Over the next 10 years, he had 4 surgeries, 2 on his lungs and 2 on his lymph nodes. He credited, I wish I had known this if there's a stock to buy, he credited the experimental drug PD-1 for his recovery. He said, "I was saved by a fabulous treatment, great doctors, and a real miracle drug. I went into trials for that PD-1, and it has been one of the greatest medicines." And Jerry, in The Gambler, which comes out on Netflix Tuesday, mentioned having cancer treatments. And there he is elaborating with Brad Townsend.
PD-1 is immunotherapy, helps the immune system fight cancer. So it blocks that PD-1 cell or whatever and allows your T cells to recognize and attack. Pretty cool.
People for years behind the scenes, when we went to Oxnard, they were whispering about Jerry's health. Is Jerry, why is he always wearing like the long sleeves?
Always a long sleeve.
Is he trying to be a little bit more protected against the sun? There were some whispers for a few years. Mm-hmm. And I guess here's the reason why.
Well, because, I mean, he went from never wearing the sleeves at all to all of a sudden he was always in them. Always. Didn't matter whether it was cloudy or not. Like, he was always in the long sleeves. And I mean, he would have the sleeves long, too, so they would cover some part of his hands.
Yeah.
As well. So it was like, I mean, I guess kind of, you know, makes sense that this news came out that, oh, okay. I could see that. And it's obviously it's great that, you know, he was able to survive this.
And as Atolo says, you know, he's just going to outlive us all.
Yes, he is. He is going to outlive everybody. Remember the movie The Faculty? He's like an alien, right? He's an alien. He's not. He's got some kind of tiger blood in him. He'll live forever.
So a final practice day in Oxnard, California. Tommy Yarsh will join us at 9:20 to recap it. But Phil Maffa, this is from DallasCowboys.com staff writers, apparently had a strong practice yesterday, finding his gaps and hitting them hard. Had several breakaway runs when he got upfield and ran through contact well. Tyler Smith has been in and out of team periods for maintenance of his body, but he got out in space a few times to lay out blocks, pave lanes for Javonte Williams and Miles Sanders in the run game. So you got Ryan Flannoy, you have Sam Williams, Marshawn Nealon, some of those guys jumping out yesterday at Cowboys practice that we will recap with Tommy in the final hour of the show.
Man, I wonder what they're going to do with Maffa. Like, in terms of what is that? I think he's obviously going to make the team, but where does that put them in that room?
Yeah.
Like, who's the odd man out?
Well, we know Miles and Javonte. I feel like this could be the end of Deuce. We know Lipke's going to be there.
And Blue.
And Jaden.
Yeah, I wonder if there's one more. Like, is somebody else an odd man out?
Sam Williams had a pick 6 of Dak on the goal line, so that's not great. And then Jerry was asked about the cornerback room because everyone's been freaking out after the Rams game that they don't have any depth. And Jerry says, probably hard to make an addition at this point in training camp, but certainly the numbers as we start the season, we have a close eye on. The other part is we have some extraordinary help on the way. With that, I think he's referring to Trayvon Diggs, even though we don't have a timeline on Diggs. He was, of course, asked about Micah. Reporters went up to Micah, and he said, "My mouth is closed. My mouth is closed." Jerry was asked by Todd Archer, "What is preventing you from talking with Micah and his agent?"
"Really? Nothing."
"So why don't you talk?"
"Again, nothing would be that, and we might or might not talk. And the rest of that gets on what we do every day."
So, again, that's Jerry's answer. "If there's a deadline to know whether Micah will play in week one against Philly, not at all. You don't have a deadline when you're playing under contract." So Jerry keeps going back to, he's under contract, guys. You guys are all forgetting that. And then yesterday, he gave the hilarious NFL sentence, "I'm a big believer in the value of a contract." Do you guys remember that when you cut players early on their deals as well? When you violate those contracts, when the player ends up getting cut.
That's part of the CBA. This is he is absolutely a deadlines make deals guy. But like you said, he doesn't believe there's a deadline because he has the contract. And, you know, unless Mike is going to come to him and give him a deal, right? Unless Mike is going to take a little bit of a lesser contract, I just don't see this happening.
The deadline that exists is only whether Micah is going to miss games. And I don't think anyone believes that he's going to miss games. So the Cowboys, the biggest thing they have to worry about after that is malcontent Micah. How big of a problem is he going to be? Now, they can point to Dak Prescott and say, hey, Dak played out a final year. Other players have gotten to free agency. I thought we were losing Amari Cooper to Washington. Mm-hmm. Remember when you talk about paying Amari $20 million a season? So other players have done it, but then Micah Parsons has a podcast. How much and how often is it going to come up during the course of the season? You know, and then this whole seesaw of leadership, Micah, how much will he forget that and turn on that while playing this year unhappy with his financial status? Those are the questions.
You know, the good news is if he's unhappy, I think if you're unhappy as a player, as an individual player, there are probably few positions on the field where you might be able to get away with that and not like have it hurt than defensive, more than defensive. Like you can easily do that as an edge. You still have to play some kind of team football, but you can also go rogue.
Yeah.
Can't go rogue as a receiver. Can't go rogue as a quarterback. Running back's another one. You hit the hole, see hole, hit hole. Everything else, you're kind of relying on maintaining the integrity of the play.
Yeah, I'm not worried about him on the field, really. Yeah. I'm worried about the locker room.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, how are they gauging this? Do they just trust that Brian Schottenheimer, who has gotten Micah, or someone has gotten Micah to go to all the practices, he's going to be at all the preseason games, he's putting on the uniform to be uniform with the rest of the team. Those are all early signs, I would think, that he's not going to be a TO cancer.
How he acts is exactly how Ezeraku is eventually going to act, and Sam Williams when it comes their turn. Because generally, the younger players look at the best player. How does the best player do it? If the best player does it this way, that's how I'm going to do it. The best, you know, when I had lunch with Bandy, he's like, you know, the hardest worker on our team was Beltre. Well, he was also the best player on the team. So everybody else, you know, from Elvis to, I mean, just name any young David Murphy, anyone. They all saw how Beltre did it, and they did it that way too.
The Cowboys, to me, front office has also completely watered down the importance of training camp. We don't care. We don't care if CD misses, and we don't really care if Zach misses. It is not important enough for us to meet the player demands, overpay by a few million dollars to get them practicing on the field with the team and their teammates in California. It's okay if they miss. RJ Ochoa tweeted, "The Cowboys, just let me get this clear. The Cowboys are going to make it through the Oxnard portion of camp with one of the very best players on the team having not participated for the second year in a row due to delayed contract negotiation drama. Football malpractice. Franco LaFranco text line.
Yeah, some of the Tolos weighing in. 817 says, why don't you just show up and play your butt off and maybe Jerry will give you a contract then?
Oh, because he already has.
469 says, Sean, how is Jerry in the wrong for not negotiating with someone who is already making a minimum of $20 million per year?
Okay, guys, we got to talk in different worlds, okay? This whole 60-year-old take of, oh, you know, these guys are making $20 million, $30 million a year. You know, I should just get out there and shut up. You sound like a dinosaur. You gotta stop. You gotta talk in their terms. It does not matter that Micah Parsons makes $24 million a season. He's not making 40. That's what matters to Micah. He's not making 45. That's what matters to Micah, and that's what matters to the NFL world. You know what I mean? Like, you can't sit there and say, well, $40 million, shut your mouth and play. Come on now. Don't sound like a fossil.
Look, are they all overpaid? Yeah, all athletes are overpaid. Like, we're way past that, though. That's not the point.
Yeah.
You know, they're overpaid because the market dictates that they get that money.
Yeah.
That's the reality of it. I mean, the NFL, the Cleveland Browns, Shedeur Sanders game got 2.5 million viewers. It's on NFL Network.
Highest, I think, on NFL Network for a preseason game.
The Hall of Fame game got almost 7 million people watching it. That was a blowout that nobody played. I don't think either Trey Lance or RJ did. Herbert even play? Herbert didn't play that game. No. Goff didn't play that game. You had backups play. It was a Hendon Hooker and Trey Lance.
Yeah.
Guys, they got 7 million viewers. That got more than I think every Rangers Diamondbacks World Series game. That's why they're getting $40 million.
Yeah.
That's the point.
You got to talk about it in their terms. The Shedeur game was the most watched preseason game in a decade on NFL Network, and Shedeur now is banged up, hurt.
He's got an oblique. You got two of them.
Cleveland sabotaging him again. They don't want him moving up the depth chart. They kept him number four string, even though he was drafted after Dylan Gabriel. You know, that was the whole conspiracy theory last week before he played.
Sorry, I was wrong. The Rangers outdrew that in the World Series. They got 8, 9, and 11 million. But still, you get the point. 7 million viewers for a preseason NFL game. But Shador's got the oblique. It's obviously not nothing, but it's also wouldn't keep him out of a regular season game. They don't believe at this point that they're playing on Sunday. It's just a matter of this gives a little bit of a crack on the door for Pickett, for Dylan Gabriel. Who was the other guy they just signed to?
Huntley.
Gives those guys a little bit of a crack in the door to kind of make the Browns forget what Shedeur did in that week one preseason game.
877-881-1053. Glad you're waking up with us and part of the 6 a.m. Club, our best audience of the entire show. We need you at 7 to win the Rangers Angels tickets because y'all deserve it, putting up the monster numbers on the radio, the app, fan cam, Twitch, and YouTube. Speaking of monster numbers, I was part of it. Thank God Bobby's out for this. Were you part of the 8.5 million people who watched the NFL podcast yesterday? Peyton has it as part of the payload after this on Sean and RJ.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
3 o'clock pregame show tomorrow on this radio station for Cowboys Ravens. 105.3 The Fan is your home for America's team. Sean Tree, RJ Choppy, and Bobby Bell back together again. 6 o'clock kickoff and then the postgame show here on these dials. The plan is for Joe Milton to be the starting quarterback again. Tyler Booker will play against Baltimore after not playing in the opener.
Brian Schottenheimer said yesterday that it will be Tyler Booker finally getting his opportunity out there. And I saw there was some discussion out there. People were trying to say, okay, was this a response to pressure? Was there any sort of like, all right, we're leaning on you, Shoddy, and you better give us the results? No, apparently this was the plan the whole time, is that this is how he's going to stagger guys and how they're going to work them in. But Tyler Booker will be playing in this game. He will be starting, and we'll see how many reps he gets exactly. It'll also be if
you're telling me, though, what you're telling me with Booker is he is so, not you, the message being sent, he's so good and so solid that he doesn't need to play in the in all the preseason games and all the action. Or you got to be telling me you're so worried about injury with what has already happened with Guyton that you don't want to risk losing two young first rounders.
Or I think the other aspect of this could be...
No, it's the only two I laid out because that was the only two I thought of.
Well, it's basically a cousin of your first one too, I think, which is...
Cousins are fine.
They think that he...
Some states.
Those are safe. Yeah,
some states.
It depends on how many removed you get down.
We're talking about Baltimore.
But if you look at the way their offensive line is stacking up right now and what they're trying to filter out and who they're trying to figure out who makes the roster, I think to Schottenheimer, he looked at it and said, I can get by him not playing in the first preseason game and get him some work extra later in order to just see that backup line all work together for one game and get an idea of who can play and thin that out a little bit because they're all close. So I think he feels like, I know Tyler Booker's starting. He's already earned that job. There's nothing he has to earn there. I would really rather see which of these guys we may cut and get the
reps.
No, and that's why I think he's going to play in the second game. I think he just felt like he could limit the first game and just say, take that one. You got in the practice against the Rams. That's all we need.
And for the first time in years, you did not send your RJ Choppy five things you're looking forward to.
I've got them.
Well, I mean, the run sheet's been made.
I know. I didn't send them. Then I saw them on your email.
Oh, my God. Why did you look at my email?
I've been looking at the email now the last couple of days.
Okay.
Just in case I forget something.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, crap. Better come up with these. So yeah. I wrote down.
You don't have
very
to.
Rudimentary.
Okay.
Because I don't plan on watching the game. I'll be in Michigan.
Oh, that's right.
So there's no point. But I got takes.
I've got a theory, by the way. I think he reads the email every day.
I don't read yours.
That's a really stupid theory.
I think he reads through the whole thing because I think he knows you stash the betting odds in there. And he wants to win those games.
No, I don't. I just go. I don't go down into the body of the email because the body of Sean's email is. I can't.
I understand.
I can't with it. It's too much. It's copy and paste and articles and
different font sizes.
I just can't.
I do it my own way.
I can't do it.
I've gotten used to it.
It's my own type of style and writing. But in terms of Milton.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the 1, 2, 3 things Brian Schottenheimer is putting on the board? Push-ups, do 80 of them before the game, slow down, calm down, check down.
I think he needs to do 80 push-ups before every snap.
Every snap.
That might help him out.
The Jack Leiter approach.
He takes about that long to get everybody set for an individual play. It's like he did do 80 push-ups in between snaps. I think the big thing for them they want to see is the take a profit. That's something coaches will tell you all the time. It's like, you don't have to go for it all. Always take a profit. If there's a profit to be had, check down here. Pick up 5 yards here. Do this. Do that. That's what coaches a lot of times will teach is that it's not a bad thing to just move the ball forward. You don't have to get it all in one play. Like, let's just move the ball. And a lot of times, Joe Milton wants to get it all on one play. And he's got a hard time just, I think, checking the ball down, not just checking it down, but delivering it with a little bit of touch. Everything's a rocket. That was what Brett Favre had to learn early on in his career. Not that he's Brett Favre, but that's what Brett Favre had to learn, was just everything couldn't be rocketed in there. But I think for them, that's a big part of it. It's just decision-making. Like, hey, slow down, breathe. It's going to happen fast for you. Like, that's what's happened. But, like, just take a little bit of pace here. Slow it down. You can slow this down.
I was reading this article last night on it was about Josh Heupel at Tennessee, where Joe was. And they were talking about the biggest mistake he made as the head coach there. And I think it was his old assistant. Is it Alex Golish? Golit, whatever. I think he's at UCF or something. And he said, starting Joe Milton was the biggest mistake they made over Hendon Hooker year one. And they said, every single member of the coaching staff said Milton was the guy. And that's just, he is such an amazing practice player, but then you get him on the field and it just screws up. Like, everything goes south.
So better in practice.
Way better in practice. Ooh. And this is the way he has been.
That does not bode well for us.
But what they're saying, that when they said better impressed, they mean like in the drills. Like once you get to 11 on 11s, everything falls apart.
Right.
But because in the drills, like if you were to just stack all the quarterbacks in those individual QB drills, Joe looks the best.
So what's up with no Dak? Are we not going to see him?
I think they are. Yeah, they're at a point.
It's going to be the first time against Philly since when? That he's had live bullets?
Yeah, move on.
Week 9?
This was the question that we got heading into when he had...
I don't like that.
No, I know. In 2020, when he snapped his ankle and was out for the rest of the year, he had they put him in bubble wrap when he had that issue with his muscle in his shoulder. That one that they said was like the pitching injury. And he didn't do anything until they walked on the field against Tampa that day.
This will be November 3rd.
Yeah. And so, I mean, he's gone longer before, like with longer stretches without playing football before walking into the season. But
was that the year where they called up the Yankees and asked them for advice on how to deal with pitchers instead of just, you know, the team that plays next door to them?
It was.
Well, they had a concessions deal worked out. It was easy access with Legends Hospitality.
Yeah, it's not like they've always managed arm injuries the best anyway. If you look at the way that they've handled it before, he's gone longer walking into the first game before without playing. I think they just view it now as like he's on ice. He's gotten injured so many times in the last few years. We have to limit his exposure, limit his reps, and so they're going to get in the practice reps like they can. They're going to get in those, you know, mixed practices with the Rams, but they're not going to give him a whole bunch of live action because I think they also feel like at this stage of his career, he knows what live action football looks like. He knows that feel.
Let's have some fun. This guy
beat is sick.
What's that?
It's a Lady Gaga song. You said, let's have some fun.
No.
This beat is sick.
Ricky Scoops.
Oh, God.
Oh, baby.
Oh, God and oh, baby. Who is that?
Nobody knows. He's just some guy on Twitter who fires off tweets with rumors and predictions, and when they're wrong, he generally deletes them.
But he's gotten some.
He has gotten some, yeah.
He has gotten some, and yesterday, he is the first person that I have seen talk about any team making a call or inquiry for Micah Parsons. And again, Ricky Scoops, if you nail some stories, I'm going to bring it up as a possibility. I know we're supposed to be writing these people off and laughing at them. He has gotten some correct and right. He's kind of like, you know, Twitter's hero. One of these guys who isn't established.
Twitter insider.
Yeah, verified and do it for the people. And it's our connection. He's not mainstream. So we really know about these rumors and things first before the rest of the public. They're never going to put it on ESPN. They're never going to attribute anything to Ricky Scoops. But he said, even though I don't think he will be traded, the Packers have a very, or it could be she, who knows. The Packers have a very serious trade offer on the table for Micah Parsons. So I just wanted to have some fun with it and dive deeper into the Packers draft picks. Would it be more win now players trading him to a route? Because that's the one question I would like to be asked to Jerry and Steven, like tomorrow in the pregame show. Has anyone called? Are you listening? Are you taking calls? Has anyone called and are you taking calls? Even if they don't answer it, I need that question to be asked by somebody. Because you'd think that someone would be making that phone call for a future Hall of Famer. What do you think?
Do I think this call has been made or specifically working on a deal with the Packers, what that would look like?
What it would look like.
So I would imagine what you're looking at here is it's going to be capital. It's going to be picks. That would be the entire thrust of it. I don't think you're swapping players in this. If you would, I would think the guy that might be involved for them would be...
If I told you, by the way, I was trading him to Green Bay, it's happening either now or right before next year's draft. They're definitely picking before next year's draft. That way you have Micah for one more season on the field. Is that a no-brainer?
I think this would be...
How harmful would it be to do it right now versus next offseason?
For Dallas, it'd be very hard. Green Bay just may say, we want him here now. Mm. Like, that's the, if you want the pick, we want him here now. And so, I mean, that may be, I would imagine if Green Bay was putting this on the table, they would say, we need to do this now. We're not going to have it available to you in the spring.
Right.
So I think it would have to look like Micah traded before the season begins. And I think that what it would probably involve would be something along the lines of, two firsts and a third, or maybe two firsts, a fifth, and a player. Like maybe that player's Romeo Doubs, their wide receiver, or somebody along those lines. That would be, I think, kind of what it looks like.
I'm out on a player.
Mm.
Just give me the picks.
Yeah, but the problem for the Cowboys is you got this Dak window.
Yeah.
They're always in win-now mindset.
They always are.
So yep, by right. trading away our best football player, that totally goes away from trying to
it does.
Win in this Dak window.
It does. Did you see some of his other scoops? Like, have you just gone and looked at some of his other scoops?
Yes.
So he kind of got the Cook one right.
James?
Yeah. Yes. He said he wants a deal with in line with Saquon. This was on July 29th. He wants one, but Bills have countered with one significantly lower. Okay, that turned out to be true. He said the Ravens will make Lamar the highest paid quarterback before the start of the season. We'll see if that happens.
I mean, those are all kind of generic things.
Very generic. And then
I think he was right on Pickens. Or he started talking about
yes
or DK one of them.
He said Pickens was that Dallas was in talks for Pickens. I don't doubt that he may whoever he is may hear certain things. He's just throwing all of it out there though unvetted. And like I mean one of the things he threw out there this year was that Trayvon Diggs was getting cut in a week and that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And that was never going to happen.
I'm looking just at the Packers draft picks for 2026. It looks like they got a first, a third, a fifth and a seventh.
Ew.
Wait, I'm sorry. I'm reading it the other way. I'm sorry. One, two, they do have one, two, three, four, five. But again, with Green Bay, you don't think they're going to be in the top half of the round.
You'll be in the 20s.
Yeah.
Especially if you get Micah. I mean, either way. If Love is healthy, you're going to be in the 20s.
Would you guys be opposed or have a problem? I think the answer is already no from Bobby because he said he'd do it to Philadelphia. It was the right deal. Be opposed to trading him in conference to the Packers? Team kicks your ass every time?
I don't care about that. Division is a different story, right? I still don't necessarily care, but I care more.
You pay the tax if you're trading in division. You're giving me more than other people are.
Division starts at 3-1s.
Three?
I mean, if they told me it's 2-1s.
When's the last time 3-1s has been given up in a deal?
It would have been
Mikael Bridges, probably.
NFL.
I mean,
certainly not Luka.
didn't the Rams give up 3 for Goff?
I can't remember. I would say two. If Philly said we'll give you 2 firsts, a third, and a fifth, I'm saying okay.
Even
if Micah wasn't a problem, it's just like, well, that's too much cheap capital. Go for it.
We have a brand new easy way for you to hook up tonight. Or this weekend. Ooh. That's next on Sean and RJ, 105.3 The Fan. But first, let me go ahead and make sure you have this number for the weekend. My brother yesterday, landing and driving on over to pizza lunch, is like, this is awful. How do you do this every day? I was like, this isn't even bad traffic. This is like 11:30 in the morning. Wait till you see tomorrow night when we go out. Because, you know, really starting at 3:30 today, chaos in the Metroplex. And people don't know how to drive. Then you introduce alcohol and people on their phones texting about their plans. You need Franklin Franco in case anything goes wrong. For the immediate medical treatment, the insurance settlement, the hospital bills, and the car repairs, they're responsible for it. The other side, not you. Tell them Sean for the Fan sent you that you're a Tolo to Mark, Scott, and Gene. They've been winning with the local organization and family in the Metroplex for 30 years. 214 or 817, all threes. 214-817-333-3333-333-333-333 or francofirm.com. Have a fun and safe weekend from Franklin Franco, Principal Office, Dallas, Texas.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We're live at Taco Bueno in Dallas, 7940 North Central Expressway. And right now, it's time for the C Block starring Corey Majors and special guest Kyle Yeomans.
Kyle, how's it going, Yeomans, man?
It's great, guys. How are you?
Did you hear how spot on my recreation of that drop was?
I actually thought for a split second it was the drop. So, yes, yeah, you're right. I thought it was just great timing, and you guys are firing on all cylinders. It's good to hear your voice again, Kev. I missed you on the last couple of weeks.
Thank you very much. I am here now that the games matter, although I guess technically they don't totally matter just yet. But so Cliff Kingsbury said something, I believe it was earlier today, if not last night. And he was asked about Terry McLaurin a few times, talking about on-field work, and he said it needs to happen soon. I think we're kind of at the point where we need to start getting those guys when they're available out there, see them gel with our offense. So I'm curious your thoughts about that, but the same fundamental question when it comes to Micah and the Cowboys, and I understand all of the logic about why he would not play in the season opener, but what I've continued to say is it is hard for my mind to process him signing, whether it's even Monday or Tuesday, and not playing against the Eagles.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think if it's going to happen, it's got to happen within the next couple of weeks in order to avoid any sort of ramp-up period or something like that. Now, I've had this conversation previously with a couple guys that have played in the league, like Isaiah Stanback, who will be on the call tomorrow. And I said, is it different from an edge rusher to ramp up and to be ready for gameplay as opposed to a wide receiver? Because we saw this with CeeDee Lamb last year when he missed all of camp. And it took him a little bit to maybe get his feet underneath him. And then, of course, Dak Prescott wasn't healthy the entire year, and it didn't turn into the record-breaking year that he had back in 2023. With Terry McLaurin, maybe that's what Cliff Kingsbury's thinking, is we need a couple weeks to get the timing right with Jaden Daniels. Maybe we need to get his conditioning up enough to where he can go through an entire game and make an impact late like McLaurin has throughout his career. When it comes to Micah, at least he's been in the walkthroughs. At least he's been in the team meetings. When it comes to the scheme and the X's and O's from Matt Eberflus, he's got all that down. It's just really a plain and simple question of, does he have enough conditioning left to get ready for that week one match? And I think now as we sit here on August 15th, and there's still 3 weeks, or just under 3 weeks, until the opener on September 4th, I think there's time to get him there. It's just a question of whether or not the signing is going to happen quick enough for him to get there and play against the Eagles, because I still see him playing. I really do. He's in a tough spot where he doesn't want to be fined. He doesn't want to lose money, and he's under contract not only this year but with those two franchise tags looming. The Cowboys have complete control, so I still think he'll play, but it just depends on how well he's going to play depending on where he comes up and is able to get back in practice.
Kyle, we watched Joe Milton in the first game, and I think selfishly Kevin and I are probably pulling for him a lot because we had a great interview with him. He's a good dude. We really enjoyed our time, and so we see we really hope a lot for him. But you know, I think Sean this morning was saying slow down and check down. Like those were the two things that he wants to see from him this week. What are the things that you've heard Joe say that he wants to see from himself that he thinks he needs to improve on?
Yeah, well, I asked him after practice last week, what are some of the things you're working on? And he said he wants to tie his timing with his footwork. And I thought that was really interesting because you hear about footwork and you hear about timing separately a lot. And with Joe Milton, it seems like it's separated a lot, which is not necessarily a great thing.
Right.
He wants to tie those two things together. He wants to be able to push himself to stay in the pocket, but to have the timing correct and the footwork correct to where he's able to put the right touch on a pass or the right velocity on the pass. Because we saw it in that first preseason game where he was a little out of sorts and he was in front of things and he was trying too hard to throw the ball hard. the one instance that I had was Jaylen Brooks on the sideline. It was just an out route as Milton kind of rolled out. And he's only like 8 yards off the line of scrimmage. I mean, he's not very far from Milton, and Milton kind of double clutches and then throws a laser right at Brooks. It put him in a tough spot. Brooks ended up taking a hit. He didn't end up he tried to come back in a couple plays later, then checked himself out, walked back to the sideline, and of course he was out of practice this week in Oxnard. So it's not only about the timing and about the delivery, it's putting your receivers in a position to be successful or to at least not get hurt. And that was one thing that, of course, Milton's not trying to get Jaylen Brooks ran over by a safety, but he did put him in a tough situation there just because the timing and maybe the accuracy wasn't necessarily on point. And he feels like if he can tie the footwork to his timing, that could maybe help things accelerate his progress in the preseason.
Now, Kyle, I'm going to need to ask Corey for permission on this question first.
Oh, gosh.
This is a question that could be deemed by some as a hater question.
Okay.
But I think it's
Is this football related?
Yeah.
Okay. As long as it's football related.
All right.
Because I have a non-football related question.
This is a football question, and I'm not trying to troll. I'm being totally serious.
Okay.
For people who are excited about George Pickens, I get it. For the discussions that we have two number one wide receivers for CeeDee Lamb and somebody who's never even been named to a Pro Bowl, do you feel like that's putting the cart ahead of the horse a little bit?
Maybe. Maybe so. But I would argue George Pickens has been as electrifying of a receiver to not make the Pro Bowl in his 3 years. Because you look at, I mean, look at the numbers. I'm gonna tell you his numbers. From
the second year, I know, was really top-notch, right?
I mean, his 23 year, he had 63 receptions for 1,100 yards and 5 touchdowns. The fact that he didn't make a Pro Bowl that year was pretty wild, in my opinion. The fact that he was not named to at least maybe even like a second-team All-Pro sort of scenario. And then last year, I mean, he still finished with 900 yards, even with all the surrounding conversation with him and his fallout with Pittsburgh. He had 900 yards in 14 games. So I get the excitement of a 1A, 1B scenario, but it's pretty clear. I mean, CeeDee Lamb is he's an elite wide receiver.
Agreed.
He is by far the better wide receiver in the room. So if that's the case, then it's a wide receiver one and a wide receiver two. And I get the conversation that you're trying to push him as a wide receiver one, but it's okay, and there's nothing wrong with having a really good wide receiver two, and that's exactly what I think Dallas has at the moment. We'll see what the production ends up being in the middle of the year, but I like what we've seen so far in practice. I like what we've seen off the field as well from Pickens. It's a chance for him to really shine in Dallas, and we'll see if he can take over that title at some point.
See, in that description you gave, that's 100% how I feel. And I think it's okay to say you have a top-notch number one and a top-notch number two wide receiver.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's okay to say that. There's no problem with having a one and a two. That's just how it should work. Not everybody has a 1A, 1B. Even if you look at some of the teams that claim to have a 1A, 1B, let's say Philadelphia, right? Who's their one and who's their 1B? Somebody's still a one and a two there, with A.J. Brown being the one and Devontae Smith being the two. Same thing in Miami with Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. Depending on who you ask, I think they'll have a different answer one way or the other. But there's nothing
Cincinnati.
Wrong with that overall.
Cincinnati's a good example, too.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Ja'Marr Chase is the number one receiver there. That's not even a question. But you still feel really good about Higgins. He's a great receiver and a great wide receiver, too. There's nothing wrong with that, and I think Pickens understands that. I think this offense understands it. We'll see, especially when we get close to week one.
What do you say, and this is from the 214, too, to the people who say CeeDee Lamb is not a legit elite number one?
That is insane.
What I say to those people are, what games are you watching?
They said the 49ers shut down CeeDee Lamb, and I'm like, okay.
Number one wide receivers have been shut down in the history of football.
Yeah, they're allowed to have an off game. They're allowed to have a down game. But when you've had four straight years of 1,100 yards and now three straight years of at least 100 receptions, that means that you've had 3 years at least where teams have game planned to take you out of the fold, and you're still putting up incredible numbers, that makes you an elite wide receiver. I don't know what games they're watching.
And then lastly, Kyle, this is not a football question.
Oh.
That drop of your name that Sean uses, it gets dropped in weird predicaments sometimes. And the other day, Kevin was like, man, is he okay that we sometimes throw in these weird situations? I feel like as long as your name's being mentioned, it's all right.
I honestly, it's funny because I'll get a text message every once in a while, and like, dude, they're really like, they're making fun of you. And I'm like, I don't think they are. That's fine, whatever. But I'm like, this is a thing they've done for years now. It's just a part of it. If it's all in good fun, then I don't care. It's no big deal. I love you guys up there. And I mean, you guys know I've been a Tolo since I got up here to Dallas. So, I mean, I really appreciate you guys and the friendship that we have across the station. So, if my name gets thrown around as a drop, I'm not in a bad spot. I really
there we go.
I always thought it was partially at least a little bit of a dig against Sean, too, for saying it's so robotic. Kyle.
Yo, no, man, Kyle, it is all love, Kyle. It definitely is. Thank you very much for your time, man. We will talk with you next week, dude.
All right, guys. Sounds good. Talk to you then.
We go. It's hour number four of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Dining room filling up a little bit. We got two more hours of broadcast to go as we do the show live here at Jake's in Grand Prairie this afternoon with Fan Phenom coming up at 7 o'clock. If you're anywhere in the area, do come by. If your goal is to become the next great DFW sports radio host, this is your opportunity. It gets no better than this right here. I mean, if you can do this, you're jumping the line. If you're not going to do this, what are we going to tell you? Go to broadcast school, start a podcast,
yeah.
Grind. You know, try to become an intern like Woolchuck and Chiafalo were, over a decade ago now?
Yeah, roughly.
So it's a long process, but you can jump the line if you're absolutely fascinating and brilliant and have amazing sports takes. And your next chance to try out's coming up at 7 o'clock as Nick Harris from the Star Telegram joins us to talk Cowboys here on The Fan. And a good afternoon, Nick. How are you?
Doing fantastic, fellas. Making my long journey back from Oxnard, just crossed into Arizona. So the trek has started, and looking forward to getting back.
Now, do you do that in one shot? Are you a stay overnight in like Mesa or New Mexico guy, or what's the plan?
Yeah, I'm going to stop in Albuquerque this time around. It's a different stop every time I do this trip, but this time around I'll do Albuquerque tonight and then finish it up tomorrow. We got a preseason game on Saturday, so I got to make it quick.
Shoot, yeah. I cannot wait to talk about that game and expectations with you. Overall, do you feel like the Cowboys are about who you thought they were going into Oxnard? Are they a little bit better, a little worse? What is the net result of that camp, in your opinion?
You know, it's funny. I had dinner with John Machota of The Athletic and Tommy Yarish at DallasCowboys.com last night, and I had mentioned, I was like, you know what? Pretty much all of the questions I had going into camp, I still have those questions coming out of camp. I don't feel like I really know what this team is going to look like until that first half of the Philadelphia game. I think you're going to learn more about that, more about this team in that one half than you will during this entire training camp, during the preseason, just because there's still so much unknown, right? And I think with the concern levels that you have on the team, whether it be the running game or stopping the run, I mean, you're going to figure it out pretty quick if both of those things are, you know, figuring themselves out, or if they're at least in an acceptable position. But, you know, I had said before camp, you know, I think this is about a 9-8, 10-7 type team. I guess I'm sticking with that. But again, I feel like we really don't know what this team's going to look like until halftime of that Philadelphia game.
Are you taking Jerry's statement that they aren't looking outside the building? Like, there's no acquisitions that are going to happen that could change our thoughts, right?
Yeah, that one's interesting. And granted, he said that before, and then they've made additions or trades afterward. But if he sticks to that point, I think it is fascinating, just because they could certainly use the help at corner. I think they could certainly use, you know, the help at defensive tackle. You know, there's a couple veterans still out there on the street that could work out. But, you know, those are the only two position groups I would probably be looking at to fill that void. Maybe, you know, maybe if there was another offensive line injury that were to happen over the next two preseason games, that one would make sense too. But that one did catch me by a little bit of surprise, just because Stephen Jones has mentioned, you know, that they are, you know, concerned about the corner and defensive tackle rooms. And, you know, a veteran addition would make sense in both of those areas.
What are your thoughts on this running back group as we move into preseason game number two? It seems like Phil Moffa's having a strong finish to camp. He looked good against the Rams. We didn't get to see Sanders while we were out there. He was out due to injury, Blues battling some injuries. Where are you at in terms of that? I mean, is anybody fighting for a spot? Has anybody maybe gained ground that you didn't think had a shot?
Yeah, I think Miles Sanders has kind of figured himself into a situation now where he's probably fighting for a spot, because you would have to think that between the quartet of Williams, Sanders, Blue, and Moffa, that they probably only take three. So you got to figure out who the odd man out would be. I think if it were to happen today, it would probably be Sanders. But if you had asked me last week, I may have said Moffa. And it's a constantly changing ordeal, I think, in that running back room. But Sanders is going to get some burn against the Ravens. That'll be big for his stock. Blue, it's going to be day-to-day. It's going to be close to see if he's healthy on Saturday. I personally doubt he plays, but it looks good for him to at least go against the Falcons in week three of the preseason. That's going to be big for him just to be able to show whatever he's done in camp, it can translate into a game environment. I think Williams is probably the only guy that's a safe lock at this point. It looks like he's going to be factoring in quite a bit with this offense going forward. But then, like you said, yeah, Phil Moffa's had a really strong week in camp. He's really come on these last few days, starting to put together some days, and he had a couple good runs in the preseason as well. So there's a feisty battle happening in there at that running back position.
Nick, do you kind of feel like that it's a little bit redundant with the style of backs that they have if you were thinking about Moffa and, like, you let go of Sanders?
Yeah, there is probably some redundancy there. I think if you look at, you know, a Javonte Williams, you know, that kind of brings the veteran receiving type.
I'm even throwing Hunter Lipke in there. I'm throwing Lipke in there, too.
Yeah.
It seems very redundant if you're going to keep a bunch of backs that are all kind of the same guy. And that's why I was surprised about your Sanders comment.
Yeah, and that's been one that I've been curious about with Phil Moffa throughout camp. Is my question about Phil Moffa has been, okay, yes, he does this well, he does this well, but what does he do well that no one else on the roster does? And
right.
I think that question is finally starting to figure itself out in the form of special teams. I don't think Miles Sanders is going to be a special teams guy at this point in his career, so it would make sense more for Moffa to be that, you know, bottom of the roster running back that can factor in on special teams, because if they're going to carry four backs in the form of Javonte Williams, let's just say Jaden Blue, Phil Moffa, and then Hunter Lipke, those four guys, they need to play on, or those two guys, rather, at the bottom, they need to play on special teams in the form of Lipke and Moffa. You know, you can't just burn one of those spots for an unactive guy on game day, and I think Moffa's starting to figure it out special teams-wise.
Nick, which is more likely, four running backs or six wide receivers?
Ooh, that's a good one. I would probably have to go with four running backs, but I think you bring up a good point with the six wide receivers as well. And that's going to be a tough battle for that sixth spot if there is
exactly.
a sixth spot. You got Jaylen Brooks, Ryan Flannoy, Trayshawn Holden has really come on. I mean, Jalen Cropper is good at camp every year, but that's another situation of what does he do well that no one else on the roster does. That's going to be a fascinating one. But if I had to pick today, I think that's Jaylen Brooks' spot. I think he's, you know, a top five special teams player on this roster.
Nick, what was the, just the overall evaluation of Dak throughout this training camp?
Yeah, I thought he had his moments for sure, and he was mistake-free mostly until the last couple of days. He only threw two interceptions in pads throughout all the padded practices, and, you know, both of them were bad, don't get me wrong, but I think when you look at, you know, what he was able to accomplish in the short to intermediate game, you can really tell that they are just trying to build rhythm in that short to intermediate game. There's not a lot of concern about what they can do with the long ball because we didn't see it a whole lot. We saw it a couple times with George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb, but I think there's enough trust there for them to be able to be like, okay, we can roll into the season knowing that's in our repertoire. Let's get this short to intermediate stuff going so that we can sustain drives. And I think we saw a lot of that from Dak Prescott. It's going to be an interesting season for him. It's a pivotal season for him coming off of this injury. You know, there's still questions about, you know, can he win big games even in the regular season? Forget the playoffs. Can he win some of the big games in the regular season as well, you know, like he did, you know, 3-4 years back? You know, he has a lot of questions to answer this year. And, you know, as far as the camp performance goes, I'd probably give it a B+. You know, I feel like he really had his moments. But, you know, we're really going to find out more about him as well in the first half of that Philadelphia game.
Yeah.
What do you think George Pickens is going to do? How much does he change the dynamics for Dak now with essentially two number ones out there?
Yeah, it's really eye-opening to see some of the space that these receivers were able to have whenever George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb are lined up on the field together. It's going to benefit CeeDee Lamb more than anybody. Like Dak Prescott for sure, don't get me wrong, but you know, you think about times last year where CeeDee Lamb, and especially in the second half of games, if you think back to the first half of the season last year when Dak was healthy, you know, those second half of games, CeeDee was just, he was schemed against, and you know, after, you know, the teams went in the locker room, they were able to, you know, dial up how to cover CeeDee. CD got shut down because there was not a legitimate threat in the receiving game. That's going to be tough to do with George Pickens on the field, and we've seen that in the joint practice with the Rams. We've seen that in the training camp practices against the Cowboys defense. Granted, it's a beat-up secondary for the Cowboys defense, but I think there is still some stock you can take away from that. But yeah, Pickens is going to be a dynamic weapon for this team. You know, I don't know if he's necessarily a 1,000-yard guy, just because now all of a sudden there's a lot of targets to get thrown around. You have Jake Ferguson in the mix. You have Kevontae Turpin, who had a really good camp. You know, it's going to be tough to find, you know, enough targets to get to 1,000 yards. But I think whenever you talk about his impact per play, if you will, or his impact per reception, I think it's going to be strong.
What about the cornerback room, Nick? I mean, Zion Childress was getting run with the ones. I thought he really has stood out through camp. I don't know what their plan is going into the season with that nickel spot. Do you think that that's an area that they're going to add, or did anybody else flash to you that you feel confident in?
Yeah, I don't think they know what the plan is at nickel just yet either. They threw all of those options out there in the first preseason game. I would pretty much expect them to do the same thing this week against the Baltimore Ravens. You know, in the form of Keymon Hall, you mentioned Zion Childress, Israel Mukwamu. Mukwamu had the athletic interception, but maybe wasn't as consistent as maybe a Childress was in the preseason game against the Rams. And then Hall has really had his moments during training camp. So, you know, it's kind of a closely contested battle, but it's also a situation of, hey, do any of these guys, do you feel comfortable enough them starting 2, 3, 4 games if you need to, especially against a really good receiving core for Philadelphia, a really good receiving core that's all of a sudden been built in Chicago. Green Bay is that fourth game of the year. You have to think about these things. And so I think with, you know, if the season started right now, it would maybe be Keymon Hall, but I don't say that confidently just because these three guys have been really closely contested. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that Zion Childress in the last padded practice yesterday, he ran with the first team the entire team period. So that undrafted kid out of Kentucky, originally from New Caney down in the Houston area, he's really come on as of late. Don't be surprised if he's on this 53.
Nick, when it comes to the left tackle spot, Nate Thomas, he seems like he's played pretty well. Do you think that's going to be a tough call for them to make if Guyton is technically healthy just in time to play week one? Would they want to run him out there not having had the training camp? Has Thomas done enough to say, all right, we could go ahead and give him the start? He's been practicing and playing in the preseason games.
You know, Nate Thomas definitely got baptized by fire in the form of Jared Verse in the joint practice in the preseason game. But I think, you know, has he had his moments? Absolutely. I just don't know if he's ready for that week one matchup against Philadelphia. And, you know, that's nothing against Nate Thomas. He's had a huge offseason. And if you had asked me going into camp who I thought the backup left tackle would be confidently, I would have said Austin Richards, and that just hasn't been the case. Nate Thomas has played well enough to be that guy. And so I think it's commendable in his effort, especially after missing all of his rookie year, basically a redshirt year. But I think you would have to hope that Tyler Guyton's ready to go week one, or else that's going to be a really, really tough challenge for Nate Thomas to face in Philadelphia against that lineup of edge rushers that they have. You would hope that Guyton's ready to go.
It's Nick Harris, Star Telegram, talking Cowboys football here with you on The Fan. Young players hoping to see more from in week two Saturday night. Does that list start with Donovan Ezeraku?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, as a Rocky, that'll be my first name mentioned on any player that has anything to do with young players, any list that has to do with young players. As a Rocky, we could also throw in Nate Thomas as well. He only had 10 snaps in that first preseason game. Tyler Booker, Brian Schottenheimer said today that he will play in this second preseason game. So excited to see that against some interesting backup defensive tackles that the Ravens have. They have a pretty deep unit as well. It's going to be fun to see what Booker can do up against those guys. John Stevens, he didn't get to play last week in that first preseason game. Excited to see what he has coming off those two knee injuries. He's had his moments at camp, but he's also had some issues with some drops these. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can keep it up as far as the receiving game goes. And then can Joe Milton just be consistent? And that's what you're hoping to get out of it. You know, we talked to him coming out of that first preseason game, and he said, man, I just went out there. I was too excited, you know, and I airmailed some throws just because I had too much on it. He's like, if I had to go back out there right now, I'd be ready to roll. And so this is his opportunity to do so. And we'll see if he learned from that week one and is maybe a little bit more consistent with his arm in this matchup against the Ravens. But regardless, it's going to be fun. You know, the storyline of Joe Milton against Cooper Rush, that's going to be fun too. You know, it's not often that you can have some cool storylines in the preseason. So don't mind if I take advantage of that one.
Any feeling on when Diggs will return?
Doesn't sound like he's going to be ready to start the season, but there is there's been a lot of optimism about, you know, how he's approached rehab at training camp. And, you know, it seems that both sides are at least on the same page. Just talking about front office and Trayvon Diggs now. You know, you go back to the beginning of camp when things looked a little tense between both sides. I think the two sides have, you know, at least mended for the for the time being. And they are excited about Diggs. They're counting on Diggs to be a big part of what they do this season. But, you know, when I talk to people about, hey, is he going to be ready for week one? Is he going to be ready for week one? It's more of a situation of, like, maybe not, but he's going to be ready for the season. And so, you know, whether that means he starts on IR and misses the first four games, they are counting on him to be a big part of this defense for the large majority of the year.
What's Nick Harris's educated prediction on if Micah Parsons is playing week one?
Yeah, that's a good one, man. I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say that he is playing just because he has been showing up. You know, those game checks, it's going to be more game check money than he's gotten in his entire career because of the fifth-year option deal. You don't want to miss out on those, you know, at the end of the day. But, you know, it's, if you're asking me, does a deal get done before then? Man, I don't have an answer for you just because you're at a stalemate, and it's tough to predict stalemates and when they eventually split. But if you're asking me, does he play week one, my educated guess is a yes.
Hey, Nick, you got to see the premiere of Jerry's kind of docu-series, documentary, whatever you want to call it. What'd you think?
Yeah, it's really well done. Shout out to the Way Brothers. They're originally from Thousand Oaks, the directors of this docu-series. They've done some really cool stuff with Netflix in the past. And you can see just their style and how they approach this ordeal. And, you know, chronologically, they did such a great job of, you know, jumping back in time and jumping forward in time. If you're a fan of the Cowboys and you're a longtime fan of the Cowboys, thinking back to, you know, the days of the 80s and 90s when Jerry Jones first got into the league and then even into the early 2000s, it's a really cool watch just to, you know, be reminded of some of the things that happened back then, but also some behind-the-scenes stuff that's really cool to see these days. And, you know, one little glimpse that I guess I'll throw out there is, you know, Jerry Jones, he did a master's thesis at the University of Arkansas back in 1964 about the business of football and how he thinks he can, you know, change the business of football. And that thesis was still available in the University of Arkansas archives. And the Way Brothers, they went to Fayetteville to get that piece, and they included it in the documentary. So, I mean, that's just the level of research that went into this. Really well done, really well produced. Just a fantastic docu-series for sure.
Hell yeah, Nick. You got me excited for it, actually. Appreciate you. Great job covering camp. What was this, number three for you?
It was. I appreciate you guys. And, hey, yeah. I had to appreciate you guys, too, because in my very first camp, y'all were the first one to ever put me on the radio waves, G-Bag Nation. So shout out to you guys. I appreciate y'all.
Salute.
And looking forward to another good season.
You're
keep knocking them out in those podcasts, too, man. You guys are doing a great job.
Yeah.
You and John.
Cross shop.
Thank you, fellas. I appreciate y'all.
Cheers, buddy. Drive safe. There he goes. Nick Harris, Star Telegram, here with you in the G-Bag Nation, home of the Cowboys. We have an hour and 43 minutes to go before Fan Phenom kicks off. G-Bag of the Day, LA Live, coming up on the other side. We'll talk about all the news that's been breaking throughout your afternoon as we're live at Jake's in Grand Prairie. Come get a burger, cold beer, and enjoy the Fan Phenom starting at 7 o'clock. Here we go. It's hour three of the G-Bag Nation. We're live, Jake's in Grand Prairie, on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. And we'll have more Cowboys discussion coming up here at 4:20. The Micah Parsons update that you might not want, but is actually pretty dang interesting. Okay, don't want to beat you down with too much Micah debate, but one of our guys brought some interesting info to the table. We'll discuss that here coming up in 20 minutes. But it's time now to talk with one of our favorite football writers, 28th season covering the NFL. You see him now at The Athletic. He's a Hall of Fame selector, and he's got one of the best names in football, Mike Sando, here on 105.3 The Fan. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
It's great to have you. Now, Dak Prescott's so polarizing. What's been the reaction to putting him where you did?
You know, I don't think he's not that polarizing for people in the league. You know, when I do this survey every year, I've got 50 coaches and executives, so there's a good cross-section of people. And I think most people agree he's kind of a low two. Some put him as a three. And what that means is you can win with them. And that's exactly what the Dallas Cowboys have done. They've won with them. But they haven't won big with him. And so, you know, that's why he's not higher. I think this is the lowest he's been this year. In the 2020s, you'd have to go back to 2019. So he slipped some within tier two, but I think most people feel he's still good and good enough. But at a certain point, you know, we want to see some postseason results probably to move up.
What do you think needs to happen for that to happen?
I thought they already did it. They got better on defense, you know, for a while there. Look, this team was second to Kansas City in regular season wins over a 3-year period, but you know, it's a mystery. Is it, you know, have they needed better coaching in those big games? Has they needed Dak to step up and carry them in a couple moments, and he hasn't been able to do that? It's tough to say what it is, but there's clearly been something missing. And it's not just Dak. Obviously, it goes back farther than him. And they've had good quarterback play. Tony Romo was very good as well. So, you know, we've all heard the common denominator, you know, is the owner. But as Emmett Smith said recently, too, you know, they've had pretty good teams. Someone's got to break through.
What do you think about, you know, Dak's profile as a quarterback on the other side of 30? He's picked up some injuries. He's had high turnover rate in two of the last 3 years. Like, do you see him sliding more from here? Do you think he holds his spot and has a chance of moving up here in the balance of his career?
Yeah. I'm a little worried. You know, I think he looks a little stiffer than he did earlier. You know, he was never this most amazing runaround athlete, but he's always been, you know, athletic enough, and it feels to me like some of that's waning, and I do have some injury concerns. Now, people forget that, you know, the last full season he played, I think he was second in MVP voting, so I'm not saying he's done. If he's healthy this year, he may be good to go. I think Brian Schottenheimer is going to help him out. I think Schottenheimer did a good job with, you know, when he was in Seattle with Russell Wilson. I live in the Seattle area, been around that team. I think Russell Wilson had some of his best years, maybe his best years, with Shoddy. So there's, I think there's hope. I think that he can be an upper half quarterback, but you know, we're nearer probably the end than the beginning for him.
I think one of the biggest takeaways that I had in your write-up here, Mike, was the quote, "I'm not necessarily worried about anything when I play him, but he's just solid." That was from a defensive coordinator in regard to Dak. Is that really the thing that holds him back from being in that elite conversation with the Allens and the Mahomes and the Lamar Jacksons, et cetera?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. There's always been a feeling with Dak that, you know, he needs a little bit more of the run game to be take the ball out of his hands some, that you may not want to be just throwing it around. Now, I think he's shown that he can be a little bit of a higher volume passer. But, yeah, I think that's a factor. Like, when you play, obviously, when you play those guys in Tier 1, you're like, oh, my gosh, we got Josh Allen this week. Look, we're going to have trouble just tackling him, you know. And I think with some of those guys in the top of Tier 2, you know, I think there's Jaden Daniels may have a little bit of that now. Justin Herbert is just so physically impressive. There's something missing there. But, you know, I think Dak's in that next group where Jared Goff is and you know, Baker Mayfield. Wouldn't you say he's kind of in that range?
Sure.
Hey, Mike, I really don't want to talk football with you. I want to talk about Nobu and the podcast that you and I are going to do. Just kind of raiding sushi, going around the country and kind of trying it out. Do you think that we have some hope doing that together?
Oh, you know, my wife just rolls her eyes a lot of things I say, but I had this dream a long time ago that I was going to go around the country raiding burger joints, and I was going to produce like a coffee table book, and it was going to make us millionaires, and I would just get to go around and eat burgers. But I think sushi, that sounds like a great way to go.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was super impressed with your ability to stand there with your Ray-Bans on and kind of evaluate the whole situation. I wish I could be as cool as this guy doing this stuff.
Well, the truth is that Ray-Bans are prescription glasses that I couldn't see anything without them. So I wore them there and I'm like, I got to leave these things on. It's like dark out and I'm leaving them on, so I can even see who I'm talking to.
I was thinking this guy is cooler than cool to be able to do all that, but it was good to see you go.
I was just trying not to drop my food, you know, or not look too conspicuous as I was. Also with the sunglasses, I could really look and monitor the food. That's another thing I do at restaurants is I
like
myself so that I can kind of see the kitchen. My wife's totally wise to this. And then I'm kind of doing this. I'm looking like, yeah, that looks like a club sandwich. I'm looking like, you know, 2 miles away in the kitchen. Yeah, I think that's coming to us. And then when it goes somewhere else, I'm like crestfallen. You know, I'm like, oh, I thought that was our food. So I was checking. I even checked to see. I was like, hey, were these all the desserts? Because at the end, I was ready to go, but I didn't want to miss if they were going to bring out a wave of desserts.
Yeah, I talked you into all the desserts. I say, Mike, get ready. They're about to put a tray out here. You're not going to believe. And your eyes lighted. It was like, whoa, okay, what are we about to do here? So. But it was good seeing you.
I mean,
there,
you do look like an expert, Brian.
Oh, yeah.
You look like an expert.
Oh, yeah.
You look, I would trust your I would trust you to know what food's coming out next.
A lot of girth here. A lot of earthquake girth.
What am I the girthquake?
Girthquake. I'm the girthquake right now.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Mike, we've been hoping for a while that your middle name was Brisket. Can you confirm to us what your middle name is?
Sometimes it is. My middle name is not Brisket, but we are going to smoke some pork butts this week. We're doing the pork butts.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Uh-huh. That's a top five butt if you ask me, Mike. Okay. Who has been the most controversial quarterback? Like, since you put this list out, what's the quarterback that you keep getting there? Like, I can't believe he's this high or this low.
Immediate pushback feedback on Jalen Hurts being tied for ninth and not being higher. This guy's been to two of the last three Super Bowls. He's Super Bowl MVP. There's some people, you know, who have their own standard evaluation. Like, what are we doing? Why is this guy below or tied with C.J. Stroud, who's had one good year and one okay year? Why is he below Goff, Justin Herbert, even Jaden Daniels after 1 year? You know, that's been a really probably the strongest one right out of the gates. And, you know, what I explained to people is that Jalen Hurts was actually higher in quarterback tiers coming off the Super Bowl loss, because at that stage of his career, people saw him developing as a passer. And they thought, hey, this guy's on his way to really being able to sling it around more than they thought when he was coming out. I think since then, you know, it was a little rocky in 2023, and then last year they took the ball out of his hands. So the perception is that, unlike some of those guys maybe ahead of him, there's a sweet spot for him as far as how much he's throwing the ball, and you wouldn't want to necessarily load him up with more. Whereas, you know, some of those other guys that are higher, it's like, hey, even Lamar Jackson, you know, in the last year or two, they've given it to him more. And so I think that's probably what it is for Jalen Hurts, just not being seen as a really good player and a team with really good players, but not necessarily someone you want to load up more.
Sounds like the people you talk to are good at, or at least conscious about, separating the team result from the quarterback.
Yeah, definitely. No doubt about it. I mean, and this year, Joe Burrow is the unanimous number one, unanimous tier one. So, you know, he was 9-8. They missed the playoffs, but everybody, you know, in the league could see why. I mean, he's not out there playing defense, and that was really what held them back. Probably kind of like when Drew Brees, remember when they gutted that defense there?
Right.
And he was like throwing for 5,000 yards every year, and they're 7-9.
Right.
It ain't Drew Brees' fault. I mean, he's the best thing they got going, and I think that's true. With Burrow, I think one of the reasons Jaden Daniels was so high, bottom 10 defense, you're in the NFC Championship game, and you're the running game and the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's hard to do. It's very rare for a rookie to be able to do that. So he got boosted up. Yeah, that context is really important.
I've been going back and forth with people about Matthew Stafford over the last couple of years. I loved how high Stafford was, but even I was a little surprised tier one in that group with some others. I mean, were you surprised that Stafford made tier one for the first time?
I was. Yeah, I was a little bit. Now, there's a huge gap between him and those top guys. I think he's 26 votes of the 50 in tier one, which is just like barely gets you in there. But he's been hanging around near tier one. And if you look at how I do this, you know, I change some of the voters every year. So maybe there's 20 new voters, and I just happen to swerve into five guys that really love Stafford more. And so he got five more votes in tier one this year, and that kind of moved him across the border into tier one territory, I think, without anybody really seeing him differently, if that makes sense.
Mike Sando with us here in the G-Bag Nation. I couldn't help but notice some of the quotes on Caleb Williams and where he came in at number 23. What do you think the thought is about him, and where's the optimism now that he's got Ben Johnson?
I thought it was super striking that of those six quarterbacks taken in the first round in 2024, almost all, you know, there wasn't much to say on J.J. McCarthy, he didn't play, but on everybody else except for Caleb Williams, pretty positive. You know, especially, you know, Jaden, Bo Nix, even Drake May, people said, hey, tough situation he went to. I liked what the guy showed. With Caleb, it was kind of like, man, alarming processing. I'm not sure he's going to be able to process the game quickly enough. And I thought, okay, is he being held to a number one overall sort of generational standard, or is this a real concern? And I think it was a real concern with enough people that it's definitely one to watch this year, and it's not as optimistic as you would have thought when they drafted him or hired Ben Johnson.
Mike, does Kenny Pickett get like an edible arrangement or some kind of gift for being all alone there in tier five by himself?
Yeah, Yeah. I didn't really want to put him in this, but I was talked into it just because of how fluid their situation is. And so if you read the quotes on him in there, they're actually not that negative. Sometimes it's a little unfair to bring somebody into a group of starters when he's not really a starter. But, it is what it is for that team, I think. And as I pointed out, I mean, I think going to Pittsburgh when they had Canada as the offensive coordinator was tough. I think if he goes to Minnesota with Kevin O'Connell, yeah, he's not tier two, but I mean, maybe he's not seen as tier five, right? Yeah.
No, absolutely. I mean, the situation matters. And I was, like Brian and I do a lot of draft work leading up to the season, I was so wrong on Bo Nix. But with people you talk to, is that more a reflection on the player or Sean Payton is just a great fit for him?
I think Sean Payton being a great fit for him is a big part of that equation, no doubt. If he had gone somewhere and they, you know, had disagreed in the front office and the coaching staff wasn't that excited on him, there's no way he has that type of season. When Payton drafted him that high, I thought, whoa, yeah. He's declaring. I mean, Sean Payton is declaring. He's invested in this guy because you could tell he was sort of annoyed by Russell Wilson. He almost didn't want that to go. And then but when you declare in the first round, Sean Payton, like, you're going to be evaluated on this. Like, your Hall of Fame conversation. If this guy's bad, then Drew Brees is going to start getting a lot of credit, right? So I thought, wow, that was a big move. And so far, so good.
Yeah, Sean hated when he and I had the discussion about Bo Nix. He hated everything I said about Bo Nix. He goes, there's a reason why you're working in radio now. You know, and I'm like, well, you know what? You were in media for a while yourself, fired coach. And he goes, well, you've been in media longer than me. Kind of a thing. So, yeah, he did. He was trying to tell me, like, I like Bo Nix. And I was like going, bro, you just like to try and be the guru guy. And he goes, no, the guy can play. I can make this guy work.
Hey, Sean Payton may know what kind of clothes look good on him, you know? And we may look at that and go, I can't pull that off. But he's got it. He's got
he does,
that guy.
Man.
And I think
he's an idiot. I love him. He's an idiot.
I think he's got a guy they're going to win with. I mean, it's not out of the realm that they could challenge for the division title there. You know, they have they've had a top five defense, and they added to it in the draft. So I think it's going to be a fun year in the AFC West.
You know, one of our night guys, Mike, his name is Fred Davis. He's a big Chiefs guy. And if you mention anybody but Mahomes being on top or anybody but the Chiefs winning the division, he'll go like full Yosemite Sam on you dang near. But what did you find out about what the league's saying about Patrick Mahomes right now?
I mean, maybe the gap's closed a little bit with some of those other guys. He hasn't had the huge statistical years, but as one person put it to me, he's kind of in that Brady chair right now where it's like, as long as they keep winning, and he's obviously a huge part of what they do, he's the standard. He's the standard. But you could make a case that on any given Sunday, you know, Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson are a tougher matchup, for game plan consideration. So I think it's going to take Mahomes, you know, not having great stats and then bowing out of the playoffs early, you know, being a one and done, and maybe Josh Allen or Lamar, one of those guys, Burrow, you know, going all the way. Then I think we'll have some fun conversations.
Well, congrats on another great report and another banner year for the QB tiers. Mike Sando, read it in The Athletic. Thanks for joining us here on your home of the Cowboys.
Thank you. Really enjoyed it. Good seeing you, Brian, in at Nobu there. Yeah.
Yeah. You and I, the next one's on me, Mike. Thanks for picking that one up.
Absolutely, yeah.
There he goes, and we're looking forward to that sushi podcast. Take it away, Mike Sando. All righty, we're live at Jake's here in Grand Prairie, and we're about halfway through the show. Fan Phenom is coming up, and that sign-up list is getting pretty busy
over there.
So we're going to have another big night here.
Banner and night.
Whether you want to try out to be the next fan host or to hang with us, this is the place to be here this afternoon. Tomorrow, we're going to be at Pickler Universe in Carrollton. Join the G-Bag Nation there at 35 and Bush, other side of DFW basically from here, but it's the best pickleball spot in DFW, and it's brought to you by Stella Artois. We can't wait to be there at Pickler Universe tomorrow. Okay, the Micah update you probably don't want, but it's actually pretty interesting, and I'll deliver it next here on The Fan.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.